Welcome to all of you here. You know, we've heard a lot of practical teaching, but I remember one of my first teacher's meetings, I was listening. And I was listening and I was thinking, oh, this is all good. But as far as something that I can actually get my hands on to do that first day of school, I felt like I was coming up empty-handed. Well, here's something that you can do that first day of school. We want to give you a little bit of ammunition for that. We will talk a little bit about some theory on procedures. But you remember right before lunch we heard that more than a certain fraction of your job is to provide a good something. You remember what the fraction was and what we were supposed to provide for our students? He said more than half of your job is to provide a good learning environment. If that's the case, then I think this topic on procedures is really going to help us in doing just that, providing a good learning environment. It helps just to bring a studiousness and a peace to your classroom. Jonathan mentioned that book, First Days of School, and if you read that, you'll read a lot about rules and procedures. Today, we're not going to spend a lot of time in splitting hairs about whether this is a rule or this is a procedure, but let me give you a little bit of an idea of what we're talking about in rules and procedures. Let's think of a Bible example. God said, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." That's a rule. But then, if you keep reading, he gave a lot of things that seem to me are procedures just to help them remember that rule. For instance, if you look at the building of the tabernacle and all the details that went into that and all the procedures that they were to follow helped to point them back to that rule. And so that's really what we're doing today. We understand the rules. Rules are like the overriding principle. Rules like respect, obedience, and order. That's rules. The procedures then are more how we get there. In the New Testament, I wrote down Luke 6:31 here. We call it the golden rule. As you would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. That's the rule. But then as the teaching goes on, we see practical ways to make that rule work. We have rules and procedures, but one of the things that I appreciate as I think about these things is that, well, Galatians says the law was our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. Your students won't be able to follow every rule and every procedure every time. They will learn that they aren't perfect. You'll learn that they're not perfect. Procedures are, in school, procedures are things like, put the heading of your paper here, and this is how you write the heading, and don't run in the hall, and those things. Those are our procedures, and I'd like to spend a good part of our time this afternoon having you help me go through a school day and talk about some of those practical things that just help the school run smoothly. It's like manners are. Help our relationships to run smoothly. Procedures are like that. I had a privilege last year of stepping into a classroom where the teacher before me had a set of procedures that made my job so easy. It was unbelievable. And I would just like for someone who follows me to be able to say, you know, that was an easy one to follow. It's kind of scary because I have a sister here today who's going to be my co-teacher, and I'm afraid she'll hold me accountable for some of the things that I say today. Procedures aren't one of my strong points. And But having experienced last year and seeing what a blessing it is, I would say that it's a blessing to have students where these procedures have become habits. I think that's a blank on your worksheet there. If a procedure becomes a habit, it's like these habits are like the bearings, and the teacher has to supply the oil or the fuel to keep these going. Sometimes the teacher, you know, we'll talk about this more later, but the teacher has to say, okay, Josh, go back and walk, or what are we forgetting right here? That's our job. I want us to, as we form an attitude about procedures, I want us to see that procedures are nice. I just used that simple term so that we wouldn't confuse it. Procedures are nice. I have some sheep. And we've learned that for the health of the sheep, it's good to dock their tails. And I read someone that it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he said he doesn't want to hurt his sheep, so he docks their tails 1 inch at a time. And I think of teachers who, I don't want to hinder my students or hurt them too much, so I'm not going to have too many procedures. We'll add more as we need them. You're docking their tails 1 inch at a time. Procedures are nice. They're good for the student. They're for the benefit of the student. And so think of procedures as a positive thing. Brother Jonathan already mentioned, find out what's already in place. And I'd like to just add to that, don't lose ground. If it's already there, keep on. Don't lose that ground, especially in these simple procedures. I was going to mention handbooks too, and ask former teachers. One of my former co-teachers said, we need help from each other. Get help from other teachers if you have to beg or borrow or steal it. And so find help. If you can get that former teacher to help you know what's already in place, that's great. I like to write them down. Write down. This is what I'm going to require for if you have a question in class. This is how we're going to do our scoring. This is how, just so that you know what you're going to expect of your students. I've seen students make neat charts and put them up on the classroom wall. If you do that, I'd encourage you to keep it more general principles rather than try to include all the procedures you're going to have. It might be a little overwhelming. So when school starts here in a few weeks, and you know you want procedures, you know that procedures are good things, I've heard a number of teachers say, don't expect to get anything really done as far as assignments on the first day of school. That didn't work for me. Because by 10 o'clock, I had told them all the wise things that I knew, and I had even tried quite a few wise ideas that I had, and we were out of things to do. And so I would encourage us to at least plan on doing some math that first day of school and plan on having more to do than what you might need so that you don't run out of things that first day of school. Introduce your procedures from the beginning of the day as they apply. Let me tell you what I mean by that is when the students walk into the classroom, one procedure that you're going to have is saying good morning clearly and loud enough so the teacher can hear it. And you're going to be there, finish with your work so you can focus on them and say good morning to them. That's just a simple procedure. But then tell them, now, when you come in the mornings, we're going to put our lunch boxes over here. And you're going to put your books on the desk here. And you're going to... So begin introducing those procedures from the beginning, and then when it's devotions time, say this is how we're going to stand when we sing. This is how we're going to decide who passes out the songbooks. This is where you're going to put your Bibles when you're finished with them. Tell them those procedures, and then go ahead and sing. Then when it's time to do your math, or your reading, whatever your first period is, then give them the procedures for that. This is how we will set up our papers. This is where we will put your papers when you're finished with them. It's not time yet to tell them how we're going to go about doing recess or how we're going to do at lunchtime or what you're going to do. Just don't overwhelm them with the whole load at one time. So these procedures are good things. If we tell it to them when they're actually interested and wondering what comes next, it seems like they're more apt to follow. There are times when you need to change a procedure or even end a procedure. Something that's been going on, but now we're going to do it different. Be careful about that, and when it happens, do it on purpose. Don't let it just fade into the distance, or don't let us start just doing something else until that becomes our habit. You know, I've noticed already when I said, we're going to be doing this way this year, if I did not enforce that consistently, we soon found some other way to do it. You know, and I think you and I as teachers can be a tremendous blessing to our church community if we have that consistency and say, we will honor this because this is our rule. We will stick with this procedure because this is our procedure. Because what happens then, in about 15 years from when you and I have them, then did you ever notice how church procedures and the way we do things can often kind of change by default? Because we haven't learned to respect that, maybe even respect it until we understand why we're doing it this way. And if we can teach those students, maybe you don't understand exactly why we're putting our headings on our papers this way, but let's do it that way. And they might not understand until they're teaching why we do it that way. But we want them to be able to change a procedure on purpose. And I think I'll just add right here. I told you keeping procedures isn't one of my strong points. I had a high school teacher tell me one time, Mr. Miller, the way you enforce that was like a jerk rope. I don't know how many of you use tow ropes, but those nylon kind of stretch a little bit, and nothing happens for quite a while, and then all of a sudden, boom. And I'd let something slide for a little bit, and all of a sudden I'd come in one day, all right, remember I said this. Well, yeah, that's true, but you said that back at the beginning of the year, and we've been sliding this way, and then we tried to jerk them into place. I would just propose that if you find that happening in some way, I was reading in the Handbook for Creative Teaching, and it said, if you find yourself in that position, it's good to tell the students, you know, I've noticed that we have been doing this way, and I'm going to give us a few days to get used to doing it the way we really want to be doing this. And so in these first few days, there won't be consequences necessarily, but I'll just be helping us to remember. And it's bringing them back, acknowledging that you haven't been consistent with it yourself, and it doesn't seem like so much the jerk rope approach. One of the things that is important is that, let's say you have a procedure that says no running in the hallway. There can be quite a few ways to get around that. We can do some pretty fancy speed walking. And you notice it doesn't say anything about no rollerblading in the hallway. help students to understand that when they break the principle of that rule, they are breaking that rule or procedure. Help them to understand that. The sooner they get that in their minds, the better it is for all of us. There are sometimes a need for a change in procedure. And it was interesting, we were talking about this, and Brother Jonathan said he notices this when he goes around to schools that have either gotten a lot larger or maybe gotten smaller for one reason or another. There are some factors that call for change. One of them is simply, as students grow older, procedures need to change. I rarely have my high school students line up in a line to go out for break. It's just not necessary. But for first graders, there's some virtue in that. Class discussions are going to be totally different for first graders than they are for high school students. So the age of the students, keep that in mind. That's a factor that calls for change. Size of classroom makes a big difference. I went from a classroom of a dozen students to a classroom with half a dozen. And I found out we simply didn't need some of the procedures for a smaller group that we did for a larger group. I asked someone whose opinion I really value, so what's a good way to keep the right procedures in place? And the answer didn't take very long. What do you think they told me?
Consistent.
Be consistent. I remember I was teaching at a school, and I had trouble with some of my older boys coming to school with shirts that were borderline inside the dress code and others that just simply weren't. Wasn't sure what to do about it. Yeah, but I remember one morning, young man came into class, and I looked at that, and I thought, I don't want to deal with this morning. I've got too many other things to do. And I thought, it's back and forth. Finally, I pulled him off to the side, and I said, you really need to call your dad and have him bring you another shirt. It'd be okay if I went to the restroom? And I said, yeah, but hurry, because it's almost time for school to start. And he went to the restroom, and he came back with another shirt. He had brought a shirt along in his backpack just in case Mr. Miller was consistent. It would have been a real pity if I'd have let him down that morning, wouldn't it? And so you need to be consistent. How many speakers have we heard this forenoon already saying the students are watching their teachers? Your character is important. We talked about procedures being important if we're going to have a learning environment. And I'd like to just talk about some very practical procedures that I think you can implement from day one. Here's those things that you can start with right away. You see under procedures for order, point number two, it says, give me five. And these are five things that I like to see from my students before we start a class. You can write them down if you like. Number one is eyes. I want to see them looking at me. Number two is ears. Number three is hands. Like hands not fidgeting with something else. Number four is be quiet. Number five is be still, like holding still. And then it says finger signals. This is something that I was introduced to. I interviewed my own children, and I asked him, so how, I noticed when I went in their classroom, they were sometimes going like this, sometimes going like this, sometimes going like this. And, Dad, it's simple. Number one means you have a question. Like, you'd like for the teacher to come to your desk and answer this science question you have. Number two means you've completed your assignment and you need to hand it in. And number three means I need to use the restroom. I need the restroom pass. But I liked that because the teacher could see at a glance what this student needed help with. And if they need to hand in their math, she can answer that with a this. And go right on with what she's doing. It allows that student to go on, and especially for younger grades, I really like that. My daughter informed me that you must keep your elbow on the table when you raise your hand. I said, what do you mean? Well, she said, you have to go like this, or you may not go like this. And simple things like that, once they got used to it, you walked into their classroom, and a student who needed help wasn't distracting the rest of their class because their elbow was on the table. It was a procedure. And here's the other interesting thing. I asked them, so what if someone doesn't obey? And they got a blank look on my face, on their face. And they said, well, I don't really know. I guess sometimes the first graders might forget, and then she reminds them. That was a consistent teacher. So we need procedures for efficiency and for order. Earlier we said something about for a peaceful classroom or for a learning environment, there's all kinds of things that could fit in those blanks. Now, the last one is enforcing procedures here. I wrote the main thing you need to know is be, and you know the answer, consistent. You need to be consistent in enforcing procedures. Procedures produce studious and peaceful students. I should just emphasize here, I'm not sure that I mentioned it, but I see here I made a note. You know, I said that if the number of students changes, you might need to change procedures, or if the age changes, you might need to change procedures. With a teacher, you're a new teacher. There may be some procedures that you change from what the teacher before you had. You will hear sometime in the next month, but no, the other teacher did it like this. It's going to happen. That's okay. But change carefully. Right, just for example, one of the first days of school, one of my older young men raised his hand before school, and he said, Mr. Miller, may I go get a chair to sit on? And it was before school, and I looked at him, yeah. And I was frustrated, because here's a 14-year-old, there's no chair behind his desk. Well, of course. School hasn't started yet. Get a chair. Why? Don't bother me about this. And so there was a bit of a time there where we needed to just clearly change some procedures in order for them not to be frustrated with Mr. Miller and Mr. Miller not to be frustrated with them. But be careful about that. There were so many things I appreciated about having procedures that have become habits. When a procedure is disregarded, go back and obey the procedure.
go back and walk. Or hand the paper back and put the correct heading on it. If forgetting continues, then it becomes not just a procedural issue, it's an obedience issue. Let me give you an illustration, and here's where later when we talk about communicating with parents, it's important that they can understand the difference here. Because if my son comes home and said, "Dad, I told Mark today that our goat had kids, and now here's a note from the teacher, and I had to stay in at recess, and you're supposed to sign this." And I think, well, it's kind of strange that he got in trouble for telling him that our goat had kids, because it was a pretty big deal at our place. But see, what I didn't realize is that we've been having trouble with little boy talking to his seatmate during class and saying, "Look at his funny shoes, and look at this, and look at that." And it just happened to be the one about the child telling the other one about the new kids at the house that brought the note. And so mom, dad says, "No, that seems a little strict." Help the parents to understand, too, why we're calling this an obedience issue instead of just breaking some kind of procedure. One of the things that I appreciate about enforcing procedures is a number of different curriculum suppliers supply those little sheets that let a student get a certain number of demerits before they get a detention. And those sheets didn't work for me until I became consistent. If you kind of get fed up, okay, that's a demerit, and then let it slip for a while, that doesn't work. But if you're consistent, and 3 times in 1 day a student breaks a procedure and they have to take a note to their parents and have it signed and bring it back to you, it doesn't take very many of those in most cases. It's just so, it's refreshing. And so communicate even procedural things with the parents if it becomes a problem. We already heard about how parents want to help. Remember, procedures are nice. Procedures make a restful, happy classroom. Now, if you would, turn your paper and on the back, let's just start at the beginning of a day. Talk about some practical procedures that you've used, procedures that might be helpful to others before school. We're going to talk mostly about procedures that the students need to follow, but you as a teacher need to be there, as was mentioned earlier, on time, and be ready for when these students come to class. Be ready to greet them with a smile instead of, "Oh no, you're here already, I can't believe it's 8 o'clock. Be prepared to meet them. One procedure that I like is expecting a good morning, an audible good morning from the students. I like it if they can put their lunch boxes where they need to be from the beginning. I like it if they know that it's going to have to be a dripping emergency if we're going to use the restroom before first break. So they need to do that before class starts. And they can, once they're used to that, it's not a problem. It's not something you have to enforce every day. Just do it consistently. Often we pass out yesterday's graded work. They should know what to do with that before class starts. They need to have drinks taken care of. Yesterday's things need to be finished. Well, let me say it this way. Yesterday's English needs to be finished and handed in before English time today if you didn't get it yesterday. That's an example of a procedure. Then it's time for devotions. They should know, okay, this is Monday, so we're going to do this. This is Tuesday, we're going to do this. This is Wednesday, we're going to do this. You as a teacher, find that out from last year. Are there some days that the fathers come in? Are there some days that you sing together? Or some days that you'll be responsible for some kind of Bible lesson? Just find that out and establish a procedure. My students, when they recited their Bible memory to me, would stand up, and they would stand beside their desk, and they would say their Bible memory. And that was a procedure that the other teacher had started. I never made my students do that, but I liked it. It was respectful, so that's something that we wanted to keep going. Who passes out songbooks? Who picks the song? Who leads the song? Think of those things before your first day of school. Establish a procedure. The first period is going to start. Think of how you want them to lay out their pages. You'll want the date on there. You'll want the lesson number on there if it's not something that they're doing in a book. Think of what you want them to do when that assignment is complete. Okay, do you want them to stack them open, closed, beside each other? Just plan those things so that you can give clear instructions for procedures. They can save you so much time. One procedure that we had is, if you have a multi-grade classroom, it is against the law to raise your hand while the teacher is having class with another class. And if you're consistent in ignoring that until you're finished, soon they'll realize that there's not really much point in raising my hand until they're finished with that class. That's just a normal procedure. What happens when you get finished with math and the teacher is with another class? You should know. Do they go on to the next subject? Do they read a book? Do they work ahead? They need to know what's expected of them. That one probably caught me more than about any other thing during my first year of teaching. What to do with a student who's finished with what I asked them to do. Those students took a lot more of, or caused more frustration for me than the slow ones did. Oh my. They're already wondering what to do and we haven't even finished this yet. So think about that. Plan for it. Do they read? Do they do sheets from the work shelf? Do they help other classes? Do they finish their art? But you need to have some kind of procedure there. At recess time, who picks the game? At what point do you have bathroom breaks? Who takes care of bringing the equipment in? How do they know when it's time to be in their seats? Do you go ladies first at recess time? That's not a huge deal, but you need to know. At lunchtime, have a procedure for lunch. You've heard of speed readers? Well, we had speed eaters in our school. What are you going to do when you've helped everyone get their lunches organized and you've sat down to enjoy your lunch? And the first person says, "Miss Miller, may I go?" What will you do? And so I think for first-year teachers, I'd say, 10 minutes, don't even ask me. That way, they'll know there's no use in hurrying through my sandwich so I can play soccer. So that's a lunchtime procedure. Who leads in prayer? Who chooses what game we play? Another common thing that we did, and this is partly with scheduling, we often had a story after our lunch recess. Gives them a little time to cool down so you don't have sweaty, smudge pages. It's something we looked forward to. One of the things I like to do at lunchtime is have an older person in the class be responsible for going out and getting lunches organized. If there's something to heat up, they can help prepare that. If you have something that's going to need to be heated up, you can put it here before school starts and it'll be taken care of. That really helps streamline our lunch. When it's time to dismiss, all of a sudden you look up and you see there's just a few minutes left and there's still so much to do. Try to begin with that wrapping up in plenty of time. I like to give 10 minutes. And what that means is I'm going over here and saying, now you're remembering that you should take that math home today. And then I go over to this student and I check to be sure they know what's expected of them. Then, all together, when you give the signal, then we fold our books, we put them away quietly, and we get prepared for dismissal. Then we stand up and we all sing together. And instead of one person tying their shoe and another person still cramming books in their desk and another person still. So if you can all do that, end on a positive note. I say sing together. It could be something else. But do something together on purpose, on a positive note, and then dismiss them all at the same time. After school, a procedure that was in place when I taught last year was that you stayed on the sidewalk for 10 minutes after school. After that, if your parents still hadn't picked you up, then with the teacher's permission, you could do something else. You know what? It was boring to stand on the sidewalk for 10 minutes. And so generally, Mom, couldn't you come sooner? Yesterday we had to stand out there in the hot sun for 10 minutes. And by 10 minutes after school, sidewalk was empty. And we could go start doing our work. And it was so nice. It was a procedure that we started. Whereas if those students are all scattered out there playing soccer and having a wonderful time, and they're saying, Mom, wait just a minute, we're almost winning. Then, so I think that was a good procedure. Dismiss on time. If you're dismissing 7 minutes late, the parents will get used to that, and they'll start coming later and later, and your problems will compound. So be prompt. Teacher, there's other more personal things that relate to us that have to do with procedures. Jonathan already touched on some of these. Limit your checking time on purpose so that, for me, my first year of teaching, one of the things I understood is I could look at the answer key and I could look at the student's paper. If they weren't the same, I could make a check mark. Or if they weren't exactly the same, I could debate in my mind for a long time. I did a lot of that too. But I spend a tremendous amount of time checking because that's something that was a little bit more black and white. The lesson preparation I didn't have much experience with, and it was easy to push it off because it was kind of hard for me. That's backward. Because the less I prepared for the lessons, the more answers they got wrong, and this is another one of those things. So have a procedure for how you do it. One of my co-teachers taught me the value of orderliness. Having those math papers on a stack, having those English papers on a stack so that you can go through them in an orderly way. Check the odd papers first. Those handwriting assignments, that math lesson that was handed in a day late, that report that you've been dreading to edit. Do those odd things first rather than pushing them back because soon that stack just gets out of hand. That's a teacher's procedure. Brother Jonathan already remembered teachers. start planning. If this is going to happen, then I need to go to bed at this time. I need to get up at this time. I need to be at school at this time. I need to do this at this time. Those are procedures that we need to get in place. I'm curious. A lot of you, like I said, procedures aren't necessarily my strong point. What are some other things, as we went through a school day, what are some other things that have helped you? Could you just help us out yet for 2 minutes?
Thinking about lunchtime, one procedure that was in place when I started teaching, the students brought their food that they wanted to heat up in a small jar, some container that could be put into a crock pot. And they would put that into the crock pot when we came in from first recess, put it on low, and it was ready at lunchtime, so it saved all the time of microwave, whatever.
It saved that right at lunchtime rush. I vote for crock pots, too. That was a good
procedure my teacher had, which I used for, I think, most of the years I taught, if not all, is work for that day had to be done before the bell rang, or it was late work. The bell rang to begin the day.
Right.
And so that way, as a procedure, I would not have a class in math or language until they had read the lesson first. But if you're going to have that procedure, they can't be cramming to get yesterday's work done. Otherwise, everything gets balled up. So I feel that procedure, it helped students surf the front side of the wave in their personal work management, and plus made the day go more smoothly for everything. Because when I taught the class, then it was a review.
I appreciate that. And when we talk about multi-level classrooms, if you have more than one grade, that's just imperative that that happens. All right. Thank you for your help today and your attention. I appreciate that. Be consistent, and I'll give you a productive classroom. Thank you.